Hi, I'm Kamala Avila-Salmon, and you're listening to Sista Brunch Podcast. I think probably what's most helpful is just kind of sharing like some of what I've seen from the studio side in terms of like understanding kind of like what salary or compensation ranges even look like. So I remember when I was first working on, there was a project that we're working on that I'm executive producing now that I championed when I was at Lionsgate,
yes.
Which will be coming out this year.
Yes.
I'll be able to talk about the release date soon, but this year. But it gave me a chance to really look more at like budgets. And so right. I would say if you are producing something, a studio is going to expect or hope that like, you know, the majority of the money for that production is going on screen. Right.
Yeah.
And so they are looking at, you know, you have your below the line costs and you have your above the line costs mm-hmm. and producers mm-hmm. fall into that above the line costs, like yeah. producer, director, actors, et cetera. So, the rough ballparks that I've seen, like the producer doesn't want to be taking up more than like 2-3%, maybe 5% of the budget at max. Mm-hmm. And so when movies would come in and we would be sort of trying to get the movie to a budget that the studio would approve, producers would be like one of the first like line items attacked, like the producer's capturing too much. Now, of course, right. when right. you get to be that mega producer, then all of a sudden they're more than willing to pay you 5%, 7%, but right. like that's not going to happen at the mm-hmm. beginning. Right. Mm-hmm. And so if you are looking to produce and you're thinking about, oh, I think I'll be working on films in the 1-5 million range, you know, that's where you're going to expect more of the 2-3%. But as the budget increases, mm-hmm. you might be able to capture a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
And then from a sort of studio executive perspective, like it varies widely by studio, but there are mm-hmm. bands. And so, you know, you'll have kind of your typical sort of steps on the ladder, your manager level, director level, mm-hmm. maybe there's an executive director snuck in there before VP, then SVP, an EVP, right? And so if you're working in creative development, those tend to be kind of like akin to sort of like when I was working in tech, the engineering and the product like team would make more than the marketing team. And that's mm-hmm. similar in Hollywood where your development executives are going to make more than your mm-hmm. marketing executives or distribution executives at the same level.
Right, right.
But like, I think where most people start getting above 100 or 150,000, probably going to be getting close to like director level. And it could okay. be a little bit higher depending on like what, how many years of experience you're bringing to that.
Hello everyone. I'm April Rain and you are watching the Sista Brunch Podcast.
You are freelancing, yep. consulting, right? Yep. And available. Anything you're comfortable sharing around what a life would look like if somebody chose to kind of go that route in Hollywood?
Child, don't do it.
Yeah, I
know.
Because you know, I left a six-figure job yeah. as a lawyer, yes. you know, nice and yes. safe and all kinds of benefits and great health insurance and all the things, and took a leap into an industry that I had no experience in. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, you know, I had a safety net. Thankfully, I had, you know, family and community that was very supportive.
Yeah.
So being a media futurist to me means you're always thinking about the next thing, yes. right? And so I love to think about Afrofuturism. What is that? Yeah, I am always searching for that portal to Wakanda. So when I am consulting, it really matters. You know, I can do a talk, you know, I can go to a college or something, and that's anything from $5,000 to $15,000 to go and talk and have conversations with the students. I always try to at least sit in on a class or be, you know, there for questions or what have you, in addition to giving a keynote or what have you. If I am doing a consulting thing, it matters. What is just as important as the money is my credibility.
Hey, I'm Effie Brown, and you are listening to Sista Brunch Podcast. Typically, a producer is supposed to get 5% of the budget. No matter how many of the producers are, like, get 5% of the budget. I have never really made that. Like, on Real Women Have Curves, like, I think I made $75,000. Right? Do you know what I mean? But that movie is done. I mean, here's the thing.
Because
I'm going to go
afterwards.
Into the thing, like,
okay.
you know what I mean? Of like,
yep.
so like 75 grand, you know, Dear White People, I think I made 20 something
It was so low, which is why I did Project Greenlight, because my house was going to be foreclosed on and my car repossessed. Like, there was a real reason why I was like, where they were like, Effie, you know, you can make $150,000 doing Project Greenlight, because that was the 5% of a $3 million movie, right? Mm. And I was like, I'm like, great, because I can get, you know what I mean? Because I really, you ever watched that movie, not The Short Bus, what was it called? The Big Short. We had Big Short where like people like got their houses and then like, and I watched that movie and I was like, oh my God, I'm the stripper. Like, I should have never bought my house. Right. You know what I mean? They literally were like, they just gave me this loan. And I was like one of those people that was like, I got a house. Yes. And they're like, you stupid girl. Oh. Like, you have to, whatever. So, but like, I managed to keep my house, which is the only reason, one of the only reasons why I'm still producing is because I have that asset of a house. Right.
Yep.
But anyway, but like for Dear White People, I underpaid myself so much, and I didn't go and do the Netflix show. Like, there was drama that, like, I wasn't invited to go do the Netflix show. I just did the movie.
Goodness.
You know, I mean, I think I get on people's nerves. Like, I will also say, like, I'm going to be real about it. Like, I'm not for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, the older I get, I think the better. I think I get on people's nerves.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
and
it's, like, I'm good at my job. Okay. I'm good at what I do, mm-hmm, but I'm seeing some people are just like, ooh, that bitch. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean? So like, and so I'm like, it's that Matt. Like,
but
you
look
know,
where, but look at,
but it's all fine now.
Are.
But I'm not like it's all. I'm also one of a certain age where I can have a little bit of distance and go back, you know, and be like, like, you probably could have handled that better. Mm-hmm. You could have done that, like, not lead with the chip on your shoulder. Like, there's, I mean, like, I'm a grown now.
Yes,
do you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
but like, going back to money, so Dear White People, like, I really underpaid myself.
Okay.
And truly, like, and people are like, oh, well, you have back end for the movie. Like, I think I made, and this is like, and I think the movie's like 10 years or so. I think maybe the residuals, I believe, might be $8,000 I've gotten. And it was just the last time. Like, we just got it like a year ago.
Oh my
God. Hi, I'm Kai Bo, and you're watching the Sister Brunch podcast. And so then financially, I'll talk about the two different things.
Okay,
show running and unscripted.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know that it actually pays well.
Really?
Now, it is not like Hollywood actor money. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not Hollywood director money.
Right.
Let's be real. It is also doesn't have a union. So that is different. However, I think sometimes people are surprised by, you know, the rate. So now I would say showrunners are making like rock bottom $5,000 a week, but up to $7,000
Wow.
Or so
when you're good, you're good, right? And they want,
and
you can, and you get to a place where you can negotiate. That's where you can go.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love
and it. You know, added, if you have your S corp, you run it through your S corp.
Yes.
And you have natural expenses,
yes,
and you probably can pay a lot less taxes than someone who is a full-time employee.
Yes.
So the rates are decent. And I think even more than that with unscripted, which a lot, I always encourage people who are pursuing scripted to actually go into unscripted, because there's jobs.
Okay.
It's not one in a million.
Hi, I'm Karen Horn, and you are listening to Sister Brunch Podcast. You know, it's when I was at NBC, when I left NBC, I was senior vice president of a department there. And I found out when I left, or I found out when a colleague of mine who worked in alternative, a white guy who was vice president, he made over $100,000 more per year than I did as a senior vice president running a department. So at NBC, when I left NBC, the salary, listen, like it depends on where you're listening to this from. You know, in mm-hmm. California, the salary was okay, but it wasn't great.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to Warner Media, the salary was really good. And I was really happy there.
You say six figures for sure.
Oh,
well, high six figures. Are you comfortable?
It was six figures at NBC.
Okay.
It was, you know, in the high twos at NBC.
Okay.
Without, but at Warner Media with bonus and everything, it was well into more than $500,000 there. So that was really lovely. And bonus time, like when Discovery acquired us, I got three bonuses that year. I was like, let's go on vacation. Like, it was like, or luckily what I did was, let's put this in my savings because that's how I'm helping to survive right now. So right now, like I, you know, for me now as a coach and consultant, I will tell you, and this is interesting, I am right now working with a production company, and the president of the company knows, like, who asked me to come in and coach and consult with them. I gave her what my rate was, and I found my rate by like dividing what my salary was per hour, like with bonus per hour.
Yes.
And she said to me, you're not charging enough. Good. Because she said, there are people who don't know this industry who are charging a lot more than you. And I think, like, I was new to this game, so I didn't understand what I should charge. Now that I'm in it, I understand more. And I think it was also not recognizing my worth.
Hey, everybody. I am independent journalist Georgia Ford, and you're watching the Sister Brunch podcast. And so I think as a baseline, the industry is struggling because it has tried to be a business. And in the effort of being a business, it has lost the trust of its audience. And so you can't sell to advertisers if you don't have an audience. It's just like a lose-lose situation. And so my hope and my dream for the business of journalism is for it to come back to its core, that it's really not a business. It's a public good. It's a public service. And so that means that either the community has to rally around and invest in it, or the philanthropic sector has to make big, bold investment so it can stand up and support our democracy. So that, just to say, you know, we've had a lot of the same struggles that any other newsroom has had across the country. But some of the things that have worked, we launched a television show. That season one cost about $150,000 to produce. And it was something that we engaged our audience to help support. So we did a crowdfund campaign. We had local foundations support. We just were very creative in how we pulled it off. We had small businesses run ads in the show. We produced like 95% of the commercials that ran in the show. And we took a chapter out of Byron Allen's book, right? We went and we bought the airtime. We ended up over budget, which was okay because the original launching of that show was always budgeted for two seasons. It was some really good advice that I got from a mentor. And she was like, if you're going to do a show, you can't budget for one season because people are going to think you're a failure if you don't like have a second. And so when, before I even started season one, I made sure that we had enough money raised to do a season two. And so we went over, but we were able to pull money from season two and then take a break in between to replenish the budget.
Hi, I am Felicia D. Henderson, and you are watching the Sister Brunch podcast. Well, I wrote it, so there was no salary for me, you know, and I directed it, so there was no salary for me.
And you produced it. I mean, you had produced, but you really, right, you did all of it.
I'm a showrunner, so I had, not that I didn't learn a ton from the process, but I think that the reason I don't talk about the budget, to be honest, is because, yes, I had investors, two investors in particular who financed probably like 98% of it.
Amazing.
One investor probably financed 80% of it. And then another one took us to about 98%. And then about five more took us the last, you know, percentage point or, and, because it is, you know, because I had so many favors, and as a person who never asks anyone for anything, I grew.
Hi, this is Aaliyah Williams, and thank you for watching the Sister Brunch podcast.
Are you comfortable telling us about kind of the range where that budget was when she first came to you?
No, I'm not. But
okay,
I will.
Okay. Yep.
What understood. I will say is, shout out to Lady and Bird Pictures, Camila
And her team were with Legeria for years before she received her funding in terms of, you know, helping her with her prospectus, helping her with her initial pitches. And Jyoti Sarda, I think is her last name, is a woman who believed in Legeria from the beginning and gave her the first amount of money for her to do some initial, an initial sizzle shoot. It was a long journey for Legeria to craft what her idea was going to be, get the sizzle, going through that process with documentary funding is a whole thing. Right. And then when 2020 hit and there was this push for, you know, really extending an arm to underrepresented voices in a lot of different ways, there was a man, Milan Chakraborty. Oh my God, Milan, forgive me for butchering your last name. But he connected Legeria to Linlay Productions.
Yes.
And that is Grace and Sumali, who really believed in the project and gave Legeria her full budget. And I can say that it was under $1 million.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
And we worked the hell out of that budget.
Yeah, I know you did.
We worked the hell out of that budget.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Asha Chai Chang, and you're listening to the Sister Brunch Podcast.
So first, I worked on getting my expenses really low, and that was through relationships. Not love, really. I mean, like, relationships, like talking to people and being like, hey, find me a place that's about this much. I don't want to pay more than, like, I had a certain amount. And so it would be like, my goal was to make at least 2 to 3 times for my cost of living per week. In that case, I meant living somewhere I didn't think of. That's why people are like, oh, North Carolina, Virginia. They kind of laugh, oh, Virginia. I was like, yeah, because what I'm going to do from here is make that project, spoiler alert, that would take me to California.
Yes.
To then be able to, you know, build up the right reputation and make that pitch to Netflix to say, can I get the money? Well, in this case, Latino Film Institute, shout out to them.
Hi, Sister Brunch fam. My name is Ashley Hipplett, and you are watching Sister Brunch Podcast. Yeah, so depending on the pathway, and like I said, we're negotiating with the community college, so this may look different, but our actual training through Hollywood CPR is free. So
I'm just saying, do we hear this?
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Yeah.
And when we do work with the community college, if you're able to enroll full time and if you do exhibit financial need, the community college is also a really flexible way to kind of get some of those costs alleviated. So that's why the community college partnerships are so important to us as opposed to private institutions that we could partner with. So amazing. We try to make it as affordable or free. And we want to keep it that way.
Hi, I'm Diana Williams, and you are watching Sister Brunch. So, oh boy. So financials in the industry, the myth, the lie. So it just depends on how you want to be in the industry. Like, so much is changing right now. And, you know, right now as we're recording so this in 2025, at the end of the year, the entire industry has changed. Fundamentally changed. People want to say it's a shift. It's this. No, it has fundamentally changed. Nothing is the same as it was in 2019.
Structurally, everything. Right. It's just
the entire environment.
Yes.
The money flow that is coming in. The way people think about their creative. The way they think about themselves as creators. The creative teams have changed. The fact that we have creator economy and we have the traditional industry. So much has changed. So when we looked at this landscape and we were looking at it in 2019 and 2020, and I was asking the question of myself, like, who do I want to be in this? And there's so much opportunity to be an entrepreneur, to be a founder. But so when you look at that, look at it from that structure of a startup. Mm-hmm. And we all know from doing independent film, every film is a startup. Even Hollywood films. So films are, each one's a startup. You get your financing, you put together your budget, you hire the people, you make the
LLC.
Product.
Like, literally, you get go an from LLC. The very beginning of,
you are an entrepreneur.
You are an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And then it closes because it gets sold or it gets acquired. And that entity closes and it becomes the next thing. So when we are thinking about that, and I look at myself as a founder and as a co-founder and as a CEO, I'm a terrible boss because I'm not paying myself because I am starting a company. This is what we are doing. And every and I try not to call them projects that we have underneath Kinetic. They are all businesses. So every IP business underneath us is run as a business. And so we are looking at what the flow of those budgets are to keep the business running so that we can continue to always make great stories that reach an audience. Our job and the reason why I got into this industry, why I really love it and stay with it, is that I want to tell stories for someone else to enjoy. How they enjoy it is also up to them, how they enjoy it. But I want to provide those entry points for them to be able to come into the world as they want to. So then when I'm looking at the financials, I'm like, what is the right amount of money to spend there that allows the creator and the creative team to be able to make a great thing? And then what is the financing that goes against that to make sure it gets to market? That is what the job is.
Hi, I'm Kelly Harris, and you're watching Sister Brunch Podcast.
These are like approximations, like an entry level location person might make around $2,000 a week.
Okay.
They also, you know, part of our union deal, because we are Teamsters. We're Teamsters 99. The location managers in New York are DGA.
Yes.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah. It's East Coast. They're part of DGA. Yes.
Their assistants, I don't believe, are union, or they're trying to figure that out. But I know that the managers are DGA, and a lot of the managers I've worked with back there, like in the beginning when I did Rage in Harlem, they're all producers and, you know, doing. Are retired or dead now, but you know, so
2K start entry level, 2K a week.
Yeah. And then they get a car rental, which is around 90, 91 a week. And then there's a box rental, that type of thing. So key assistant location managers. And like I said, this is like ballpark. I'm going to say they're around probably 2,500 and then location managers, we make $1 million a year.
We found our new job.
I'm sorry, was that a billion or a million? I'm
billion, billion, billion. No, it depends on the project. Yes. So like scale these days might just starting, I want to say it's hovering closer to around 4. And then that's almost like a base.
Yes.
And then you can, of course, negotiate a higher rate.
And we like to talk about that and encourage our guests. You know, obviously in that entry level position, you don't have a lot of room to negotiate. But as you move up and you've got that supervising title, you are in a position to be able to, you don't have to take the first offer, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know, and it comes down to, I think, knowing your worth and your value and the people that hire you. They know what you're worth.
There you go. Yes,
and
they do.
And it's their job to save money.
Hey everybody, my name is Marie Douglas, and you are watching Sister Brunch. There isn't necessarily something that protects composers.
So what? Yeah, what are the kind of different kinds of composers you could be?
There's so many. There's like you can get licensed for film, of course, but not just to film. On the screen, on the big screen, there's, you know, TV film, you know, so commercials and things like that. So, you know, there's, you can be someone who writes strictly music in that way. And that's a very lucrative method, you know, getting your things licensed. Something that I do pretty often is just composer for hire in general. And then in that scenario, what protects me will be contracts,
right?
You know, and in any of these, you know, scenarios, like
what would factor into you deciding how much you would start with?
I guess what factors into me and my asking price is what you need, you know, and what, because if you're needing something that you're not even coming close to the amount with the pay, then I know that you're going to have a hard time.
Right, because they say, oh, I need this and here's how much I have. And
if it's too far off, then it's not going to work out, no matter how much I do to be nice to you. But feature film, as in like, what's the budget of the feature film? That's, I mean, you know, I guess that would be the biggest thing.
Okay.
Like what are they working with? Because, you know, I've seen people complain a lot right now about, you know, get the $1 million budget for the film. They're trying to pay the composer $5,000 or $2,000 or something crappy.
Yeah, Right.
You know,
right.
like that's not going to cut it.
Okay. Okay. So there is
if you're, if it's a million for the film, 10 or so can be going to the music.
Hello, my name is Rain Hansen and you're listening to the Sister Brunch podcast. And so, you know, I would say if you want to do art department, definitely, you know, RPAing is a good way to test it out and see, you know, what parts of it you like, what parts of that department you like. Because there's the more office side of things that are like, you know, floor plans and graphic design and, you know, more like computer software stuff. And then there's the shopping and the building and the
painting is like all of that.
Yeah, there's so like much actually, other physical stuff. You know, it just depends on which side of it you like.
And you, which side do you do the?
I like being on set, so yeah, I do a lot of set dressing and prop stuff. Or on like, you know, short films, I'll do like production design as well. Depending on the scale, I feel like I worked pretty much every role, but it's hard. I mean, I will always. I think figuring out what your bare minimum is and like making sure, like I'll do it, take a flat rate for a short film. I know how it goes as a, you know, director. I get it. And so, you know, I have my, like I wouldn't do a short film as a production designer for less than 1,000. I mean, that's the lowest. Good. But that's my bottom line because I know what it will require of me to do those passion projects.
Right.
Especially when, you know, it's like you're probably prepping alone. And then you're going to get what, like one PA to help you on set. And like, you know, there's so much involved. Like it requires so much time and creative energy, you know, that you, I'm like, if I can't pay rent with this, then
it's
not even worth me like killing myself over. Because it's like, it's truly like at least 2-3 weeks of work. Like,